T-Mobile 5G internet keeps getting better. Boost your connection to harder-to-reach places with home internet plus and get internet right where you want it.
With Wi-Fi that reaches the attic, I finally have a home office.
Get T-Mobile home internet plus for $50 a month with autopay and a Go 5G plus line. Check availability at T-Mobile.com/home internet.
During congestion, customers on this plan may notice speeds lower than other customers and further reduction if using greater than 1.2 terabytes per month due to data prioritization. After $20 bill credit plus $5 per month without autopay, debit or bank account required. Regulatory fees included for qualifying accounts. $35 connection charge applies.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 43 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. That's where I post out all of my newest work, whether it be these podcasts, any articles that I write, updates to my Patreon. You guys can keep up with all of that by throwing a follow over at JoeOrico99. Like I mentioned, we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. It is the fastest growing place to play fantasy sports in the industry. Very easy to see why when you do check out their site. I know a lot of people have an Underdog account already, but if you don't, you can use my code Joe99 for your first deposit. It will get you access to a special pick as well as a deposit match of up to $250 in bonus cash. So make sure you guys are checking out Underdog Fantasy. There's a link in the description of the episode for those stragglers who have not yet signed up. But guys, today we're going to be talking about the big things that took place over the course of the weekend. Later on in the show, we are going to be touching on the most added and drop players of the day as well. But let's start off talking about some of the big things from Saturday, and we will start with Jose Miranda. Jose Miranda just went on an incredible run that we haven't seen happen in 72 years. The last time somebody did what Jose Miranda did was in 1952. He had hits in 12 consecutive at-bats. It just doesn't happen. You don't see this from anybody. The greatest players, the worst players just getting lucky. Like, this just doesn't happen. We've been huge fans of Jose Miranda on the show this year, so it's really great to see his work paying off. He's getting regular playing time, and he is, at this point of the season, batting .331. Jose Miranda has a .906 OPS. He's only striking out 13% of the time. He's hit 9 home runs. He's chipped in a couple of stolen bases. He's been everything you could have hoped for, and then some, if you did pick him up maybe in the last week or so, just as a speculative ad, see what you're getting. You've gotten some amazing stuff that's led him nearly to a top 100 overall player for the season at this point in time. Now, he's already been added in most cases. Jose Miranda was somebody I was looking at write-ups from a few weeks ago. He was like 11% rostered in late June. He's up to 69% over on Yahoo. I don't think there's much time left if you haven't added him. He's probably gone if you are talking about standard leagues. I think most people saw what Miranda's been doing and they picked him up. He's batting .424 over the last 30 days. It's just hard to put into words how great he's been. And even over the last 2 weeks, like, that streak is obviously doing a lot of the heavy lifting, but 22 for his last 38. That's a .579 batting average over the last 2 weeks. He's been incredible. He's getting good lineup positioning in Minnesota's lineup as well. Earlier in the year, he was kind of bouncing around, and he would be at the bottom of the order. We've seen him a lot recently in the 2-4 part of the batting order. Every now and then, he may bounce around. He might go down a little bit, but this is an everyday player at this point who is eligible at first base and third base, and I think if you're still leaving him out there on the waiver wire, you are really missing out. Now, I don't think, again, like, that's many people, but even in shallow formats right now, even in 10-teamers, third base is not great. You get the added bonus of first base, and you get everyday great production. Is he always going to be producing like this? No, he's not going to hit .330 probably. That's pretty clearly not going to happen. But even rest of season projections, You know, Zips projects him for a 288 batting average. Steamer, 272. The Fangraphs depth chart projections have him at 280. Like, this is a solid batting average asset with some pop who will chip in a couple of steals and play every day. I think you should be picking up Jose Miranda if he's still, for some reason, out there on your waiver wire. But again, probably not too many leagues at this point. Let's talk about Ben Rice. He had an absolute monster day. He hit 3 home runs on Saturday as the Red Sox lost 14-4 in New York. This one was kind of crazy to watch, especially when you look at the history. Like, he was the first Yankees rookie to ever hit 3 home runs in a game. And I think part of why, like, I was a little bit skeptical of what we were going to see from him at first. Was he going to play every day? He was batting 6th, 7th, 8th. Okay. Now he's playing every day, leading off in front of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. That completely changes the equation. I don't know that Ben Rice, in and of himself, is such a massive fantasy game changer. Like, 3 home run games are lovely, of course. If you have him on your team, if you used him in DFS that night, or if you bet on him or whatever, like, that's obviously great. Extrapolating that going forward, like, we shouldn't read too much into it. I think he has really solid power, but he's not going to just hit 25 home runs rest of the season now. Whereas we're probably going to see another 5 or 6 home runs. We're going to see an all right batting average, probably somewhere in the 240 type of range. He's a really good on base percentage league guy, 12.5 walk rate so far in his 18 games. And that's kind of what we saw from him throughout the minor leagues as well. 11%, 12%, even as high as sometimes like 15% walk rate. So really good there. He's only striking out 17% of the time. There's a lot to really like here with Ben Rice. I'm picking him up and using him as a catcher where I can. I'm pretty sure he's catcher eligible everywhere. I know that for the Yankees, he's been playing first base, but he did come in. Well, I mean, he caught one game, but he has been predominantly first base, that fill-in for Anthony Rizzo. And I think as long as he's hitting at the top of the order, he needs to be rostered. You can maybe make an argument that 2 catcher leagues, wherever he is in the order, he's probably going to be viable, but... You know, you could kind of even make the argument at this point that he's maybe approaching one catcher territory, and maybe not even approaching. He might even be there already. As long as he is at the top of the Yankees order, I know that the rest of the lineup is kind of hit or miss, whatever, but Soto and Judge, like that right there, it's a big reason why the Yankees have such a massive lead in the American. Actually, are they still leading the American League East? They might have. They've been kind of struggling recently. Let me see. Actually, no, they're not in the American League East lead anymore, but they're still 55-37. I know they've been struggling for a little while now, but that offense led by those two guys, that is just such an advantage. If you're hitting in front of them, like every time Ben Rice gets on base, there's a good chance he's going to come around and touch home plate just based on that right there. So I think that he is somebody that you got to take a look at least think about if you are in a one-catcher league. It is tricky if you do already have like a William Contreras, or if you have either of the Contreras brothers, really are a number of those top-tier catchers. It is going to be hard to say, okay, I'm going to drop one of these guys, or to say I'm going to put him in a utility spot, because I don't know if he quite warrants a utility spot. Most catchers don't. I think, generally speaking, he is more of a two-catcher guy. Like, he's a must-roster player in two-catcher leagues. In one-catcher leagues, I think it really depends who you have. If you're one of those guys who likes to churn around catchers and you pick up the hot guy of the week, and maybe this week it's Garver, next week it's maybe, who knows, Tyler Stevenson or somebody. Like, you just kind of churn it in and out, whoever is picking it up the pace, whoever has a nice matchup, whatever. If you're one of those people and Ben Rice is still sitting out there, I wouldn't have any problem picking him up. He's at 58% on Yahoo, so there are still some leagues out there. But I don't think we can just extrapolate what we've seen so far and say, yeah, he's going to just keep hitting these bombs. He's going to hit close to 300. I think he'll be a very solid asset, but don't get carried away because of a 3-home-run game. We tend to do that. I think he's very good, but don't read too much into that one. I also want to talk about Tyler Anderson from Saturday. I don't even know how he's doing it anymore, but this was 8 shutout innings, 10 strikeouts. He did not walk a batter, only allowed 3 hits. Tyler Anderson was named to the All-Star game, and honestly, it's hard to argue against him being an All-Star. I know that below the surface, he's not so, so great, but what he has done on the surface this season is a 2.81 ERA, a 1.18 whip. 77 strikeouts, 112 innings isn't crazy, but he's won 8 games for the Angels as well. I mean, the Angels needed an all-star representative. I think Logan Ohapi probably was a little more deserving, but it's really hard to argue against Tyler Anderson. The main reason that I bring him up is because I think we've reached a point of the season where there will be people who are maybe not fully bought in, but he's up to 55% on Yahoo. A lot of people are more bought in than they would have been. Especially with this start, I think he'll start one more time before the break against Seattle, which, knowing Seattle's offense, that might be a perfect game coming from Tyler Anderson. I think it's a good opportunity to take him and try and sell him here, and I think there's a good chance you are able to move him 281 ERA is going to be what you need to be selling people on, because when you look below the surface, I think things are going to start to get pretty ugly. He has a 503 xFIP, 446 xERA. His Sierra, the one that I like to look at more than any of the other pitching or ERA estimators, his Sierra's at 513. He doesn't really strike anybody out, 16%, and it comes with a pretty egregiously bad walk rate, over 10%. So it's a 6.6 strikeout minus walk rate. I don't think he's very good at all. I think he's been very, very fortunate. A lot of it does come down to that 229 BABIP. He's stranding 84% of base runners. This is not something where you look at it and he's like, all right, he's going to keep up this pace. He's a second half guy that I can trust. Like, if you're drafting for the second half today, there's going to be some leagues. I think on the NFBC, they're going to do some second half drafts, gladiators and whatnot. I don't know where he's going to get drafted, but I'd imagine in the average league, if you're redrafting today for the last 3 months of the year, Tyler Anderson would probably go too high just because of those surface stats. When really, if you look below the surface, everything is horrible. There's nothing you can point at and be like, well, this is good. It's all bad. It's all really, really bad. And I think if you can get out from under him, especially coming off of a monster game on the weekend there, I would be trying to do it. Let's move along, though, and talk about Sunday. And we'll start off with Tarik Skubal. He had one of the most dominant outings of the season against the Reds. It was 7 innings of one-run ball, 13 strikeouts and no walks, 41% CSW, and a 24.7% swinging strike rate. You guys hear me rhyme off these numbers. I think a lot of you are familiar with CSW, swinging strike rates. When you hear something that's kind of stands out to you, it does make you, like, you know, pop your eyes out of your head a little bit. 40-plus percent CSWs don't really happen very often. Swinging strike rates that are pushing nearly 25% are even more rare. This was an amazing, amazing start from Tarik Skubal. And I think at this point, he's fully established himself as a top five starting pitcher in baseball. I was a little skeptical coming in. It was, you know, we were buying into a second half last year that looked really good. There's an injury history. I wasn't fully sold. I certainly didn't think we'd see this. He's a 2.37 ERA, a 0.90 WHIP, 132 strikeouts, and only 20 walks to this point of the year. A 0.90 WHIP, that is just so beyond valuable. Like, yeah, the strikeouts, the ERA are great, but that WHIP, I feel like WHIP does get kind of left behind when we are talking about fantasy baseball, when we're talking about baseball analysis. It's a lot more predictive of what's going to happen going forward than ERA and a lot of other numbers. That WHIP is just glorious. It's doing so much for your fantasy teams. And I think at this point, Skubal has an incredibly compelling Cy Young case. While I'm talking, I'm going to pull up the latest odds and just see what exactly the bettors are saying and what the betting apps are telling us more specifically. I think it's kind of hard to see a world where he doesn't win at this point. I could be wrong there, but and anything can happen, right? Like, we have the whole second half of the season. We don't know what's going to happen, but at this point, especially considering he has double-digit wins, if you look at the betting market, he is currently the favorite at plus 115, and then it's Corbin Burnes at plus 230, and then a lot of guys that are way, way behind, plus 1,200 Garrett Crochet, plus 1,400 Lugo, 1,600 for Gilbert. It looks like it is going to be Tarik Skubal. He's one of only three pitchers in baseball, himself, Chris Sale, and his teammate, Jack Flaherty, who we've also been really, really high on this year. He's one of those three are the only guys who have a 30-plus percent strikeout rate with a less than 5% walk rate. I think if he gets to 15, 16 wins, you know, that's a lot of the old-school voters are going to look for those kind of numbers. It doesn't matter. It does matter to some extent, like the other things that go on, but if you have, like, an eye-popping win total with a low ERA, that's kind of all that you really need. I think if he does get to 15, 16 wins on the season and having 10, having 10 already, that does seem pretty likely. I think the award is probably Tarik Skubal's. I think he is likely the Cy Young winner for this year, and I think he's at worst the top five starting pitcher in all of baseball.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwoodone.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What do Devontae Adams, George Kittle, Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown all have in common? Well, besides being some of the most reliable hands in the game of football, they're also the stars of the new Netflix series Receiver. From the same team that brought you the show Quarterback, Receiver takes you deep inside the huddles, locker rooms, and personal lives of five of the best pass catchers and playmakers in the NFL. Catch Receiver now playing only on Netflix.
Let's talk about DJ Hurts. He had a bit of a rough outing against the Cardinals yesterday. 4 1/3, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 4 strikeouts, and 2 walks. He had a 29% CSW, a 13.7% swinging strike rate. We've seen flashes of brilliance from DJ Hurts. There's been 2 double-digit strikeout games already in his first 7 starts. But there's also been quite a bit of inconsistency, and that's led to a 5.17 ERA, a 1.40 whip. And the thing that really does stand out to you, 41 strikeouts and only 9 walks in his 31 and a third innings. The strikeout upside is amazing, and we have mentioned this a few times on the show now, that Washington is really doing great things with their pitching development. I don't know what exactly it is. I don't know, but every one of their pitchers this year has exceeded expectations. And that's something where you got to point to, you got to give the guys credit individually, but there's something they are doing, whatever it is. There's something in the water out there in Washington, and these guys are just really coming along quite a ways in their development. I don't think anybody really expected that much out of DJ Hurts this season. I'm not the biggest prospect guy, but I don't think a lot of people were terribly high on him. I think that the strikeout upside is just ridiculous. And if you look at the strikeout minus walk rate numbers, then that is really a good, easy thing to look at and say, okay, is this guy good or is he not good, essentially. If you're seeing anything in the close to 20% strikeout minus walk rate range, this guy is a very good pitcher. Sometimes small sample sizes can skew that a little bit. But so far, he's got a 22.7% strikeout minus walk rate. The one thing we do need to pay attention to here is that his command has always been pretty terrible in the minor leagues. If you're looking at any level, really, he's like the best he was at any individual level in terms of walk rate. It was over a 16-inning sample size in 2021 at High A with the Cubs, and it was 9.4%. Every other level, every other sample size, 16, 15, 14, 20, 14, 13, 19. Sometimes we're talking about 55 innings. Sometimes we're talking about 15, 10 innings. But it doesn't matter. Like, wherever he's been, the command has been a huge, huge problem. Strikeouts have always been a part of his game. Upper 30, sometimes even eclipsing 40% strikeout rates. But with that walk rate, I do think that is something that can potentially come back to bite him. He's at 6.4% right now. It's very rare to see a guy have that level of command problem in the minors and come up and it's all of a sudden just fixed to the point where he's now like much better than average in terms of his walk rate. I think that in deeper formats, this is a guy you have to have on your rosters. And 15-teamers, I bid on him a couple times yesterday. Didn't work out for me. I wasn't able to get him. It's blind bidding NFBC leagues. It's very tricky to figure out how much people are going to bid, 12-teamers versus 15-teamers, whatever. It's very tricky to figure out. I did not successfully win him in any of my leagues. I think he's a very solid option in those deep 12s and those 15-teamers. When you're talking about standard-sized leagues, 10- and 12-team, you know, ESPN, Yahoo, CBS rosters, where it's not quite as deep, especially if you're talking like a head-to-head roster, where you don't usually see corner infield, middle infield spots, and it's slightly smaller pitching rotations. I think in that situation, he is more of a situational streamer. You see a really nice matchup. You see he's facing a team where they're striking out a lot. Like if he's facing the Mariners, like you take the over on that strikeout total. I think generally speaking, he still needs to be considered more of a streamer than a must roster player. And I think his next start is going to come against the Brewers. That'll be his last start before the All-Star break in Milwaukee. I think that one's a little bit tricky for me to get behind. Milwaukee's been a really good offense. With the inconsistencies we've seen from Hurts, it could go very well. That's the problem with this type of profile, especially in shallow leagues. You want to really, really protect those ratios. And there's a chance that he goes out there and really hurts your ratios. Like, yeah, the underlying numbers are very good. But to this point, 140 whip, 517 ERA, it has been kind of rough for you. I do think it will be better, but you are going to see some inconsistencies with a guy still figuring out the major leagues and somebody who has shown a propensity to walk batters quite a bit throughout his time in the minors. You are going to see some problems. So I think you're streaming him against a lot of teams in those shallow formats, but a team like the Brewers, I think, is a little bit too risky for me. If we're talking a head-to-head league, this is going to come on the weekend. So there's a chance that you're in head-to-head and you're saying, you know what, I need strikeouts, I need a potential win, I'm going to start him here, and that's totally fine. I think Roto or any other kind of neutralized weekly situation where you're not so much focused on today's stats, you're looking rest of season type of deal, if it's a season-long points league or whatever, I think that's where the conversation does change a little bit with DJ Hurts. I do like him. I think he's a very bright future, but for right now in shallow standard leagues, I think he's a little bit too risky to call him a must roster player, but I do really, really like the underlying skills. Let's talk about Jose Berríos. The Mariners lineup, like we mentioned, it's the cure for everybody's strikeout problems. If you can't strike anybody out, you go pitch in Seattle. Yesterday, we've talked about Jose Berríos' strikeout issues a lot, and we're going to get to it again in a second. He struck out 10 members of the Mariners yesterday. Over six innings, he allowed four earned runs, seven hits, walked one batter with a 31% CSW and a 13.2% swinging strike rate. He looked really, really good, especially considering what we've seen recently. But I think I want to chalk this one up more to you're facing a struggling offense in a pitcher's haven other than Berríos is suddenly fixed or whatever. His massive decline in strikeout rate is something that we really need to worry about. 23.5% down to 18.7%. It was 17.6% going into yesterday's game, and that start really, really helped him out there in the season-long numbers. Raised his strikeout rate more than a whole percent in one start in the middle of July, or I guess we're still technically early July, but it goes to show you like what that 10-strikeout game did for him, because recently Jose Berríos has not been able to strike anybody out. The eight strikeouts against the Yankees are, and it's like you might look at this and be like, two of his last three games is 8-plus strikeouts. But if you look at the season as a whole, it's one against Houston a couple starts ago, and then ignoring that Yankee start, which we can't fully do. He still did it, but putting that aside for a second, three strikeouts, one strikeout, 4, 2, 5, and 5. This is not a guy where you can go out there and say, I'm getting 7Ks from Berríos tonight. I'm getting 8 strikeouts from Berríos tonight. It's just, it's not really ever been who he is. There have been times when we've seen like a 25, 26% strikeout rate. For the career, it's 22.9, which is very average, and that's what we should expect from him, to be about average, if not at this point, a little bit worse. Like we mentioned, it's been a dip this season that's backed up by the lowest swinging strike rate he's had since he was a rookie in Minnesota. It's 8.3% on the swinging strike rate, and that rookie season was only 58 innings, so I don't even know if you really want to count it necessarily. This is arguably the worst version of Berríos we've seen, and it's, you know, if you don't really see that when you look at the numbers. The ERA is 3.76. It's not that bad. The whip is at 113, which is very good. But again, like he's stranding 83% of base runners. He's allowing only a 250 BABIP. And if you look at the career numbers there, he's allowed a 292 BABIP for his career. It's going to skew generally a little bit higher pitching in Toronto because of the turf. And we saw that in his first year in Toronto. It was 328. Last year was 289, which were both generally a little bit higher than what he had been doing the previous couple of years. This year at 252, that does feel like an anomaly that will correct itself. Stranding 83% of base runners, his career number is 73%. That 10% bump, what is causing it? Other than just it's been a bit of a lucky season for Berríos. He's allowing more hard contact. Barrel rate is slightly down, but hard hit rate is up. Average and max exit velocity are both up. I don't think this is going to end terribly well for Berríos or his managers. And I think if we are talking about 12-teamers, again, those standard-sized 12-teamers, it's different in the NFBC because the rosters are bigger and it's harder to cut bait on somebody. But with Berríos in a standard ESPN or Yahoo 10 or 12-teamer, I think he should be treated as more of a streamer. And honestly, if you can sell him off of that, you know, use that narrative, two of the last three games, eight strikeouts. So the strikeouts are coming. They're really not. That Mariners start really does, really did help him out for the season as a whole there in terms of the raw numbers. Adding 10 strikeouts in one start is obviously massive, especially for a guy like Berríos, who for the season as a whole, José Berríos has only struck out 87 batters in 115 innings. It's just really has not been an asset for him. Generally, he's been closer to a strikeout per inning. Don't really see that guy coming back, and I do think that he is not somebody that you outright drop in a lot of cases, but explore selling him, see what you can get. Again, those ERA and WHIP numbers are very solid. Berríos has won a decent number of games, I think. Yeah, he has 8 wins, so it's not like you're selling a guy who has a 5 ERA with 2 wins or something. There are some concerns under the surface, but I think with José Berríos, you can bullshit people into thinking that he's actually done pretty well this year when, in reality, it hasn't been that great for him. Let's move on. Let's talk about Brady Singer. Excellent start against the Rockies and Coors. 7 innings of one-run ball where he allowed 6 hits, struck out 7 batters, and walked a couple as well. He had a 33% CSW, 16.3% swinging strike rate. He looks a lot similar, or looks pretty similar, to what he did in 2022 when he was breaking out. If you look at the numbers this year versus that year, you know, 2023 kind of changed the way we viewed Brady Singer. It was an absolutely dreadful season for him. But right now, he has a 2.93 ERA, 1.17 WHIP, 96 strikeouts and 31 walks in his 101 and a third innings pitched. The numbers below the surface for him are really, really encouraging. And I think Brady Singer is maybe not like ever going to be an ace type of pitcher, but I think he can be really, really good. 2.93 ERA, we have the 3.59 xFIP, we have the 3.77 Sierra, really good numbers. I think the hard hit rates are still like somewhat of a problem, 8.7 on the barrel, 40% hard hit. But I think that he is still a really, really solid pitcher who's not really going to hurt you too much. Like when he's had bad outings this year, they haven't really killed you so much. Like for the most part, he's been excellent. There was one start where he allowed 6 earned runs, one start where he allowed 5 earned runs, and that was all the way back in April. Like this is a guy who has been very consistent. He hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs in a month. Like he's been very, very solid for you. I think he's almost like a more polished version of Semien Woods-Richardson, who you can trust going out there. Like, you know, the upside isn't massive. Like, you're not going to get 7 shutout with 10 strikeouts very often. But generally speaking, you are going to get 5-6 innings, 2 or 3 runs with, like, 5 strikeouts. And I think people will kind of gloss over that a lot of the time because it does feel kind of boring. And maybe it is a little bit boring. If you're in a really shallow league, and if you're in, like, a you know really shallow 10-teamer, maybe it's not something you need to worry about. I think in most cases, he's very, very solid and somebody that should be rostered in just about every league. Like in those really shallow ones, I'd get it. You want to shoot for higher upside, but he's pitching for a good team. Going to have more win opportunities than I think we expected coming into the season. I'm really not that concerned about what we're going to see going forward. Is he going to have a sub-3 ERA at the end of the season? I'd say probably not, but can he be somewhere in like the mid-3s type of range, mid to like, you know, 3.5 to 3.7 type of ERA? I think he absolutely can. And there's a lot of value in that, even if a lot of the time we're always searching for like that next upside top 10 type of player. A guy like Brady Singer kind of does get forgotten about a lot of the time. Even though his roster rates are high, I don't think people really recognize that he has been pretty much the same version of himself as we saw in 2022. The numbers are very similar across the board, and I do think that he can be like a mid-3s ERA guy. Let's move on to the hitting, and let's start with Corbin Carroll. He had his first home run. I had to look at it, and I had to double-check this was true once I saw it on Twitter. Exactly 2 months to the day since his last home run, which came on May 7th, he took Dylan Cease deep to lead off the game. It was a high pitch. Didn't look like something that a lot of people would really want to even offer at. Corbin Carroll hit it a long way and hit it out of the yard for only his third home run of the season and his first home run that had not come at either Great American Ballpark or Coors Field, which are the two most homer-friendly parks pretty much in all of baseball. It's hard to put into words how disappointing Corbin Carroll has been, but I'm also getting drop questions about him pretty much every day at this point. Like, should I drop Corbin Carroll in my 10-teamer and pick up player X, player Y, whoever it is? And it's usually like, holy shit, how far have we fallen? There was chatter in my Patreon yesterday in the chat about Corbin Carroll versus this guy, Corbin Carroll versus that guy. And I'm just reading these, like, they're kind of valid questions at this point. A lot of these potential pickups, guys that have a lot of upside, But Corbin Carroll was like the number five player in fantasy last season. He's 23 years old, 22 years old. Yeah, he's 23. I think absent an actual solid report that there is an injury, because I think we've all assumed that the shoulder is messed up, there's something wrong there, and that's what's causing a lot of these problems. Without us actually hearing that from him or the team, because at this point, it's been like we're a year out from when he hurt himself, or quote-unquote probably hurt. Like, he did miss a game or two, but it wasn't that serious. We're like a year removed from that at this point. Roughly speaking, about a year. I can't remember the exact date. Why haven't we heard anything if there's actually a serious injury? Most of the time, we hear it the day of or the next day when there's an injury. So I have to think, the more time that goes on, that there's really nothing wrong here in terms of the actual structure of Corbin Carroll. He's healthy. From what we understand, he's healthy. And I think that maybe we're not looking at the power coming back all the way this season, but we don't really know. And when it comes to the drop questions, are you going to find somebody with this kind of upside on the waiver wire? I guess it depends on what kind of fantasy player you are. Some people want to shoot for the higher floor, but I'm telling you right now, if I saw Corbin Carroll hit the wire in any of my leagues, I would pick him up like faster than you can do anything. That's when you can snap your fingers. I think he can still be a solid rest of season asset, even if he doesn't return his draft price, which at this point, that ship has long sailed into the distance. He's not returning first round value. There were some leagues, I think his minimum pick this year was number two. There were some people who took him as high as number two overall. Sometimes he fell. I have him in one league. I'm 13th out of 15 teams in that league. I wonder if you can tell why. And I took Corbin Carroll because he fell in that draft a little bit to, like, I think it was 11 or 12. I didn't have a share yet. So I'm like, okay, I'll take one Corbin Carroll. I wish I went any other direction there. But even with that disappointment, it doesn't mean that he is just useless rest of season. Even with the struggles we've seen from Corbin Carroll, he is among the leaders in runs scored the National League. He has 54 of them, 54 runs at this point of the season. He's pacing out for a 100-run season. He's stolen 15 bases. So even just the easy extrapolation, I know he hasn't stolen as much recently, but let's say it's 25 steals with close to 100 runs. Maybe he gets the 10 homers. Ribby's batting average homers, they're not going to be what you were hoping for. But that source of runs, like, he has 23 runs in the last 30 days. He has excellent speed. I think even in shallow leagues, it would be a big mistake to give up on Corbin Carroll. I don't expect the power to suddenly return in full force, but absent any concrete injury news, there's a chance that he just is able to find himself again. It's very easy to forget how young he is, because when these guys come up and produce like MVP caliber players, we just, in our mind, throw them into the general pool of their major leaguers now. But we don't really, it's like the Jackson Churio thing. When everybody was criticizing him earlier in the year, it's a different situation. It's not exactly the same, but Jackson Churio is 20 years old. Like, of course he's going to struggle. He's not just going to come up and he's not going to be like a generational player right away. Like, Jackson Churio could actually be a generational talent. But how often do we see that at age 20? Like, even Mike Trout came up for the first time and looked like shit, had to get sent back down to the minors. So I think a lot of the time we get ahead of ourselves a little bit in terms of expectations. That's not to say you shouldn't be disappointed in Corbin Carroll. We absolutely should be. It's been a rough, rough season. But I think it would be a mistake to write him off if you're in a dynasty league and you're selling low on Corbin Carroll, if you're dropping him in redraft, if you're selling him for pennies on the dollar. I just can't really get behind that. I think it will end up being a mistake, even if Corbin Carroll is not what you were hoping for. And he is nowhere near what we were hoping for. But if he ends up with 100 runs or 95 runs with 25 steals, 10 homers, drives in 50 or 60, it's still serviceable. It's still more than serviceable, even though it's not that first-round player that you were thinking you were going to be getting. Let's talk about Brooks Lee. He's made an immediate impact in the big leagues, safely hitting in each of his first five games. He's hit a home run. He's driven in six. He's also going to be gaining third base eligibility pretty soon. I think it's one more game on Yahoo, and he needs six more on the NFBC. I think he's earned an ad in most leagues. He's got great plate skills. He has the ability to hit for average. There's some decent pop there, and he'll chip in a couple of steals. He's not going to burn the bases around, but you know, he can chip in two, three, maybe four steals rest of season. Batting average, I think he'll be in the 250, 260 range. He's hitting 474 right now through his first five games. Obviously, we don't read anything into that. But I think he's like a 250, 260 hitter probably this season with the potential for more. He's hit at very high rates in the minor leagues, 350, 289, 375, 292. He's had some really nice batting averages with some decent pop. And now he's given the chance to play every day in Minnesota. He's going to have multi-position eligibility very, very soon. And honestly, with the health of Royce Lewis, I don't know what the situation is going to be. They said it's a grade two, we weren't sure how serious the injury is. When you hear grade two, you're like, okay, this is probably like 6-8 weeks or something like that. Again, I'm far from a doctor, but when you hear there's a grade two problem, it's usually going to lead to a bit of an extended absence. So Brooks Lee should have a role here. I would imagine that if he keeps this up, he's not going to be hitting 7 through 9 for very long. And like we've mentioned many, many times this year, third base is awful. If you can pick up a third baseman who's producing, playing every single day, I wouldn't hesitate to pick up Brooks Lee before somebody else does, because somebody else will. He's up to 38% on Yahoo, 7% rise from last week, and we've seen more than 4,000 ads just today. So I think if you want Brooks Lee, it would be in your best interest to probably pick him up now before he's gone everywhere, because I think that is, it's going to be happening pretty soon. Another couple of decent games, Brooks Lee is probably way into the wind in terms of waiver wire availability. But let's move on and let's talk about Bo Naylor. A big pinch hit home run yesterday against the Giants. Over the last 30 days, Bo Naylor has been pretty impressive. He's batting .283, he's hit a couple homers, driven in 11 runs, and he's stolen a base. He is the catcher of the future in Cleveland, and I think over the course of the season, we will see more playing time come his way. He's not playing enough to be relevant in those shallow formats. But if you're playing in a two-catcher league, if you're playing in an on-base percentage format, I think down the stretch, we are going to see a much better version of Bo Naylor. He's been through the struggles. Like every player, pretty much every player, they have to go through some period of, I'm not good right now, and maybe I'll be good. And not maybe I'll be good, but you Wyatt Langford, Jackson Holliday, you come up, you struggle, you go through that mental block, you go through the physical, I'm not that great at the big league level yet. And then I think over time, generally, these top prospects do figure it out. Look how great Bo Naylor was last year in his first true cup of coffee in 67 games. 11 homers, 5 steals, 13% walk rate. He only struck out 23% of the time. We have seen the worst version of him to this point of the season. Up until recently, we've seen a 30-plus percent strikeout rate, not a lot of power. He's not stealing at all. Like, it has not been good for him, but I think this is, the struggles are now behind him for Bo Naylor. He's 24 years old. We've now seen 136 major league games. So I think he has enough under his belt, especially with the recent sample size of good production, that you can be pretty optimistic going forward. I don't think that they are going to give the reins to anybody else in Cleveland. I think even though it's been kind of frustrating this season how they've used him, he is the guy, and I think over the course of the second half, we'll probably see that playing time tick up a little bit. Now, he's still, like I said, he's not relevant in shallow formats, but if you're in two catcher leagues, I think that he is somebody that is really worth considering down the stretch, especially if you're rostering, like, I just cut bait on Alejandro Kirk in a few leagues and a couple other catchers that are kind of like, maybe they're okay, maybe they're not. I think if you are playing in the NFBC, you see Bo Naylor sitting out there, odds are, for most people, that he is an upgrade on your second catcher. So definitely keep an eye on him. I think we're going to see things start to get even better over the next few weeks for Bo Naylor. Let's talk about George Springer, who has been, I'm going to just quickly double check, I believe he's the number one rated fantasy player over the last 2 weeks as a whole. Let's see. No, he's number three. He's actually number three. But in the last 2 weeks, which is just looking at the last 14 days, 17 for 44. 5 home runs, 16 ribbies with a stolen base. He's also scored 10 runs. It seems like every home run he's hit has been a 3-run shot, which is obviously great for the RBI category.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at DiscountTire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
What do Devontae Adams, George Kittle, Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown all have in common? Well, besides being some of the most reliable hands in the game of football, they're also the stars of the new Netflix series, Receiver. From the same team that brought you the show Quarterback, Receiver takes you deep inside the huddles, locker rooms, and personal lives of 5 of the best pass catchers and playmakers in the NFL. Catch Receiver now playing only on Netflix.
Saving money and outdoor storage solutions now at Menards. Suncast sheds are perfect for storing toys, long-handled tools, and yard equipment. These sheds feature low-maintenance construction, easy assembly, and include a 10-year warranty. Saving money on Suncast storage sheds at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. For J.D. Power 2024 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money at Menards.
As a Blue Jays fan, I absolutely love to see it, but I'm pretty skeptical that he'll be a shallow league viable asset rest of season. Drastic declines in the batted ball data, specifically the exit velocities and the hard hit rate. We've talked about this several times on the show. George Springer is not hitting the ball nearly as hard as he used to, especially in the Houston days, but it's been on a decline for the last couple of years. But it's shocking when you look at that max exit velocity. It's down almost 6 miles an hour from last year. He's not hitting the ball as hard as he has in any other season of his career. 110 max EV. Previous max was about 113.6. And usually it's 114, 115, even as high as 116.4. That's down pretty drastically. On average, he's down more than a mile per hour. The hard hit rate is down. The launch angle is down. There's not a lot that you can look at here to say, yeah, this is a sustainable pace for George Springer. I think closing it at age 35, considering everything we've seen from him all season, I don't think we're really going to see him be a shallow league asset. If you're talking deeper leagues, absolutely. But I'd be pretty surprised if he holds shallow 10 and 12 team viability going forward. If you're in a five outfielder league, that definitely changes things. But in standard three outfielder leagues, I think it's more of a hot streak than something sustainable that he can build on. And I think we may have flipped the narrative fully on its head to this point where he is a sell. If you can look at this production, if you can tell somebody like, yeah, they need an outfielder, they need some pop, look at Springer, he's back and you can get off of him. I think that that would be a really wise thing to explore. A lot of people had dropped him. A lot of people had fully cut bait. He's in a bad lineup. Like, yeah, he's moved back to the top of the order recently, but he's still, I think, really not somebody that I want to be investing in. If somebody's trying to sell him to you, I wouldn't be buying him unless the offer is for nothing. Like, there are still some leagues where he's on waivers. If shallow leagues, he's only back up to 80 on Yahoo. He was down in the 50s. There are still some leagues where he's out there, but he's just not somebody where I'm going to be saying, yep, you got to pick this guy up second half. He's in for a big stretch. Like, I think this is probably the big stretch right here that makes his end of season line look relatively palatable. And you'll say at the end of the year, oh, well, George had 17 homers. He stole 15 bases. And a lot of that production, I think, is going to come in this little stretch we're seeing right now. I think he's very hot. Is it going to sustain? I would wager that it's probably not. Let's move on and let's talk about the top ads and drops of the day. Of course, we do look at Yahoo for that. And the number one ad, no real surprise, is Ben Rice, like we mentioned at the top. I think that he is somebody that you got to be at least very interested in right now. If you're in a one catcher league and you're running out a top five catcher or something like that, there's not really anything you can do unless you want to put him in the utility spot, hope that you can kind of capitalize on what he's been doing right now. I don't think that we're going to see a ton of power. I think that he is a solid enough asset, especially while he's batting ahead of Soto and Judge. That's really the main piece here. If the Yankees put him back down to seventh tomorrow, that changes the whole equation. But while he's at the top of the order with those two guys behind him, I mean, you could put anybody at the top of the order. You could put me at the top of the order in front of those two guys. I think I'd still do pretty okay. It's just such an amazing spot to be in. And I think while that is the case, I'm not sure how long it'll last, but while that is the case, I think that he is worth exploring for sure. Andrew Abbott is getting picked up quite a bit. He's another guy that I don't trust at all, really. Now, he's starting against Colorado, but something that you got to know, like when you see Colorado on the road, we get all very excited about it. But Andrew Abbott is a Cincinnati Red, and he pitches in an arguably worse park to pitch in than Colorado. They're both dreadful. It's not hard to really pick which one is worse, depending on what you're talking about. But this is a tricky park for a guy who has really overperformed this season. We talked about Tyler Anderson. It's the same type of deal with Abbott to some extent. 3.28 ERA, but he has a 4.94 xFIP, 4.86 Sierra, and a single-digit strikeout minus walk rate. 18% strikeouts, 9% walks. It's not a profile that I really want to believe in. He's another guy where I think he's been very lucky to have a 2.32 batting average on balls in play, stranding almost 86% of base runners. It's not a situation I want to buy into, especially when, even with the luck, he's still giving up a lot of homers. He's still giving up. The hard hit rate's not bad. Barrel rate at 8% is whatever. But 1.5 homer per nine is kind of stark, and you are going to see that the long ball come back to bite him, especially in those home starts. He's always had a home run problem. Like a lot of the time in the minors, he had it as well. Not at every single level, but you know, in AAA, his last stretch, he really did. In high A, he did. Like there's a lot of different levels where he did struggle with the long ball, and pitching in Cincinnati is not going to help that. I think the matchup makes it an okay stream, but he's really not somebody that I'm tripping over myself to put into lineups today. I'm really not. Luis Garcia has been really fantastic. I'll specify Luis Garcia for the Nationals because there are a few of them. Nearly a top 50 player over the last month if you're looking at the season as a whole now. 135th ranked player according to Yahoo. I do recommend looking at Razzball or the Fangraphs Player Rater, but for in a quick pinch, take a look at what he's doing on Yahoo. 135th ranked player, 30 runs, 10 homers, 44 ribbies, and 12 steals with a .277 batting average. You know, we've talked about how certain positions are a lot deeper than others. Second base really stinks. Second base and third base are the really tricky ones to fill this year. If you're seeing Luis Garcia out there, and you probably are, he's only 42% rostered, but like we've talked about, he's being added quite a bit today. If you're seeing him out there, you need second base. I think you could do a lot worse than Luis Garcia. He's somebody that's pretty damn consistent. Like last year, I thought he was doing good things as well. They sent him down. I thought it was a little premature. And the season line as a whole last year in 447 at-bats was actually not bad. .266 average, 61 runs, 9 homers, 9 steals. He wasn't bad. I think this year we're seeing a much better version of him, though, and considering the barren wasteland of second base, I'd be pretty interested in taking a look at him there. Colt Keith is also among the most added players today. I wrote him up yesterday on Patreon. I really, really do like Colt Keith. I think that it's just more of a situation where he's probably primed to have the majority of his fantasy success in the future, which I know it sounds really stupid, but I don't think that what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, which has been like he's a top 20 player over the last week, I don't think that's really sustainable considering the whole profile here, at least right now. Like I think he can grow into a much better fantasy asset, but it's a bad ballpark. It's not a lineup that you can look at and say is going to do him any favors whatsoever. It's one of the worst lineups in all of baseball. You're talking about a guy who doesn't really hit the ball all that hard. There are a lot of problems, I think, for his short-term value. I think if you're talking about in the long run, I think he's going to be fantastic. But I do think that 2024 will probably be spent, you know, just getting his feet wet in the big leagues. He's probably a solid batting average asset, probably going to be somewhere in like the 250 type of range. But that park, the relative lack of speed, like he has stolen 5 bases in 79 games. 6 total attempts. Like maybe we get to double digits. Maybe we see him hit another 4 or 5 homers. But overall, it's like if you're picking him up, it's because I need help at second base. I need something probably for the short term. He's hot right now, so maybe you capitalize on that a little bit. But I think there's really nothing here that tells me that 2024 is the breakout for Colt Keith. I think he's worth a look, but I don't expect this recent run to become the norm from him just yet. I think that he will grow into a great, great player. But I do think that there are some problems when you're looking at his short-term value. You know, that 35% hard hit is really, really bad. You're not seeing that speed a lot. The park is going to suppress power to begin with. I just think that there are some problems when looking at Colt Keith for 2024. But going forward, I really like him. I don't have any problem with investing in him for Dynasty and even picking him up in redraft leagues. I just don't think it's going to be like this last stretch is going to be the new norm for him. I think this is more just a hot streak. He had a 2 home run game. I don't, and that was in Cincinnati, mind you. We talked about Cincinnati's ballpark. He had a couple home runs there. I just wouldn't read too much into what Colt Keith has been doing recently for the short term. John Gray, he's starting tonight against the Angels. He's getting added up quite a bit. I think he's okay. The strikeouts have been kind of really, really frustrating with him. If you look at the last, like, really, like, 8 starts, pretty much. 2 strikeouts, 1 strikeout, 3, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3. It's not a lot. Like, he hasn't struck out more than 4 batters in 2 months at this point. It's not great, but the matchup with the Angels does make it where I'm okay to use John Gray. I think probably if you're streaming him in a 12-teamer, it's all right, but he's not somebody where I'd be running out of my way either, just based on what we've seen. I think if you're looking at the week as a whole and you think you're going to need to keep up in terms of volume, in terms of strikeouts, wins, etc., I think he's fine, but in a roto standpoint, from a roto standpoint, I don't think that John Gray is really somebody that I want to be putting into a lot of lineups today. Christian Scott was one of the more popular ads today. And he did very well. He did very well against Pittsburgh. It was 2 runs on 1 hit with 1 walk over 5 2/3. Now, they were really playing with kid gloves here. I think it was 77 pitches after he threw 99 in his last minor league start. A little bit strange for sure, but I think that he is definitely somebody that is worth rostering pretty much in all formats, especially with Colorado on the road due up for him later on this week. I'm not sure what's going to happen once Kodai Senga comes back. Maybe they send Christian Scott back down. I'm kind of hoping that they recognize how good he is. I know that that first start against Washington wasn't great, but the prospect pedigree here, the potential for Christian Scott is like front of the rotation type of starter, I think, SP2 type of guy. Maybe not an SP1, but an SP2. And I think we've seen some really good signs from him in his short stretch of time at the big league level. And especially with the Rockies due up later this week, I think that he is a really, really smart ad to be making. Let's talk about the drops. Number one is DJ Hertz. And actually, I just saw this right now. It just happened. They sent him down to AAA. This is happening as I'm recording on the show. I just got the notice pop up on in front of me. This is a little bit reactionary, I think. They're going to put Joan Adon. I believe I'm pronouncing that one right. I always mess up that particular name. They're going to put him in the rotation instead from the report I'm reading here. I don't really agree with that. That seems like it's a bit of an overreaction. Like I said earlier in the show, I think that there are going to be some inconsistencies, but I think that what he's done is still very, very impressive. Like we mentioned, those strikeout minus walk rate numbers, 7 starts, 2 of them with double-digit Ks. It's a little bit strange. I thought that they would give him a little bit more rope than this. But in that case, he is a drop. He is a drop in a lot of cases. I guess I'm very glad, like I said earlier, I didn't actually secure him in any of my bids this weekend. I was bidding $20-$30 on him in 15 teamers out of a $1,000 budget. Wasn't successful. I'm pretty happy with that right now. I'm pretty surprised by this, honestly. I did not expect they would send him back down, but that's baseball, I guess. He's a drop. He's a drop in those shallow formats. Like we was probably a drop already, like we mentioned. He's probably just a deeper league guy, but not helping anybody out pitching in Rochester. So I think, yeah, he's a drop where you still have him at this point. Holding out for him to come back up later in the season is very tricky. If you have a minor league spot, that's a different story. But I think DJ Hertz is waiver wire fodder now in a lot of cases, which is kind of a shame for those deep league players. I think that there was some value there, but I understand it to some extent. I just thought they'd give him a couple more starts here. Michael Mercado, kind of what you were probably expecting here against the Braves. He had a very nice debut against the White Sox, against the Cubs. His first, and debut is maybe not the right word, but his first start was very good against the Cubs. He'd already pitched in relief before, but that was 5 innings of 1-run ball before, and what he did against the Braves was 5 runs on 5 hits with 3 walks over an inning and 2/3. Absolutely should be dropped everywhere. I can't believe he's still rostered in 12% of Yahoo leagues. I don't think there's really much here other than like I'm just hoping for volume in a really deep format. I think for right now there's no need to be rostering Mercado really anywhere. Edward Cabrera is also among the most popular drops. He started yesterday against the White Sox, did not have a great outing, 4 hits and a walk. He struck out 4. It was just really not what you're hoping for from Edward Cabrera. I've been a big fan of his for, it feels like forever. I feel like I've always been a big fan of Edward Cabrera. Really, really invested in him before 2023. I was out this season and pretty happy to this point with a 684 ERA, 156 whip. I feel like he's a lot better than what we've seen before, and maybe it's a change of scenery thing. Like I don't know what he needs to do. The command has always been a huge problem with him. He's shown the ability to strike out a lot of batters. That command has been a huge thing. I don't think there's really any need to be holding him anywhere. His next outing is projected to be against the Reds in Cincinnati, so that's not one where I really think there's much need to hold him at all. Let's talk about Zach Littell. The RotoWire blurber had a bit of fun here and said he got lit up. Littell did get lit up yesterday. 7 runs on 9 hits and a walk. He struck out 5 over 4 innings against the Rangers. It has been a little bit rough for him recently, and I do understand if you're dropping him in a lot of cases. He's at 26%. Shallow leagues, I get it. If you're playing in a 10 or a 12 teamer, then it's probably pretty borderline, especially in those 10s. Like he's a cut in 10s. But if you're talking 12s, especially deeper 12s, I wouldn't be rushing to get rid of Zach Littell. I think he's still very, very good. And I think maybe I'm just a sucker for guys who don't allow free passes. The walk rate is incredible there. And I think the talent level is a lot better than this 444 ERA and 137 whip would suggest. I think he's a soft buy low. And I think, honestly, a lot of the time you might be picking him up off the waiver wire like we're talking about him in the most drop player section today. 3,200 drops already recording here in the 3 o'clock hour. So it's, I think if you are in a deeper league, you hold on. In those 12s, I think it's, I mean, it's really situational. If you have a deep pitching staff, it's one thing. I think a lot of people are still looking for viable second half innings. There's a lot of worry about what we're going to see from a lot of these aces who have broken out. The Crochets, the Heels, the Skeenses of the world, Jared Jones, am I going to have them in the second half type of deal? I think there are people who are kind of worried about what their pitching is going to look like, and Zach Littell is somebody that I do expect to give you solid innings in the second half of the season. I really think that he is a really good pitcher who hasn't gotten the results that he probably deserves so far this year. So I get dropping him in shallow leagues. I would lean towards holding on, though, in a lot of cases. The last one we'll talk about is Logan Allen. Last night, or yesterday in the afternoon, got sent down to AAA. The 8 wins, I mean, I hope you got your fill with those 8 wins, because he gave you a 5.67 ERA and a 1.55 whip, only 76 strikeouts in 87 innings. He's an absolute drop everywhere. He's not very good at this point. Last year was a pretty decent rookie season for him, 3.81 ERA. He did have a 1.40 whip, but it was pretty solid overall. He has taken a pretty drastic step back in what we've seen this year. The 8 wins is just ridiculous. It just goes to show how random the stat is. And we're going to talk about this 8-win Logan Allen season probably for a while. We're going to look back in the offseason, talk about the unpredictability of wins, and say, look at Logan Allen. He had 8 wins. And then Reese Olson's the one that I've kind of come across for the Tigers a lot this year, who's just been snake-bitten with the win. It does happen. Baseball is super, super random. But that's why we try and break it down here as much as we possibly can. I really appreciate everybody who does tune into the show every day. I love you guys. You guys are amazing. If you haven't already done so, I'd really appreciate any ratings and reviews as we continue to get the show off the ground. We're approaching our 50th episode, so I guess it's hard to say we're quote-unquote new at this point. We're just about at the two-month mark, but any help you guys can give in terms of ratings, reviews, subscribing to the show, all that really does help me, helps the algorithm, however the algorithm works. But that will do it for us. I'm not going to say who it is yet, but we have a very exciting guest coming on the show on Friday, somebody that I have convinced to come out of podcasting retirement. He's an incredible fantasy baseball player, somebody who is very well known in the industry, especially in the higher stakes community, who hasn't done a podcast in, I don't think he's done one this season. I was chatting with him in the DMs the last couple weeks, and I convinced him to come out of retirement. So this Friday afternoon, we are going to have a very fun episode with a mystery guest that I will announced later on in the week. I won't put it out on Twitter first. I'll say it here first so that the people who listen to the show can get excited for that one a little bit before. But that will do it for me. Enough of the rambling. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99, posting all of my stuff over there. And if you're looking to see even more of my work, support me directly, you guys can check out the Patreon link that is also in the description of the episode. Daily fantasy baseball content for you guys over there. But that will do it, guys. We'll be back again tomorrow to break down Monday's slate and talk about the popular ads and drops. Do it all over again. But until then, everybody, take care and have a great night.
What do Devontae Adams, George Kittle, Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown all have in common? Well, besides being some of the most reliable hands in the game of football, they're also the stars of the new Netflix series Receiver. From the same team that brought you the show Quarterback, Receiver takes you deep inside the huddles, locker rooms, and personal lives of five of the best pass catchers and playmakers in the NFL. Catch Receiver now playing only on Netflix.
Wherever the road may take you, Discount Tire and Continental Tire get you there safely with the perfect combination of style, comfort, and price. Get a set of Continental tires at your local Discount Tire store or online at discounttire.com. Discount Tire, let's get you taken care of.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
As school germs return, rest easy. Clorox has got your back to school. Ugh, you're back?
It is I, your kid's germy desk, and I've got things to say. I've been sneezed on, used as a tissue, there's chewed up gum under my...
Calm down. I'll get my Clorox disinfecting wipes.
Oh, and can you please get these sweaty gym clothes off of me?
School, am I right?
Clorox disinfecting wipes kill 99.9% of viruses and bacteria and clean hundreds of messes on hard, non-porous surfaces when used as directed.
Get big savings on vinyl plank flooring at Menards. Legends vinyl plank from Great Lakes Flooring is durable, waterproof, and is a breeze to install. Legends vinyl plank flooring is perfect for active lifestyles. Save big money on Great Lakes Flooring at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. For J.D. Power 2024 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big.